There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Drive Live Talks Legal.
Our guest today is Ali Al Assad. He's from Yamalava and Plefka. Ali, thanks for coming in. Happy New Year.
Same to you.
I think it's the first time we've seen you in the new year, isn't it?
When
do you stop saying Happy New Year to people? Question.
Well, I felt it was appropriate to greet Ali with a Happy New Year, actually.
I completely agree. Mm-hmm. When you haven't seen somebody, but when it, you know, it was like January the 30th and you haven't seen them since December the 30th, do you still say Happy New Year on January the 30th?
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
All right, good for
I
you.
Mean, if it gets to sort of June, I mean, I think you're taking it too far.
Maybe.
But aside from that, no, I think it's fine.
So it can last a quarter, is what you're saying. Okay, good.
Within a timely manner. That's what it says in the law. Ali's nodding, so I must be right. Yeah. Anyway, we are here to talk about all things legal. And of course, Ali is prepared to answer any of your questions. Do text us in 4001 via the free messaging app. Or we do like a phone call, 423 1010. And Ali, one of the things you wanted to talk about today was looking at end of service benefits and other employment dues. And you've said this because I guess it's a time of year some employers are offering bonuses. And it's also a time of year that lots of people are evaluating their position, whether they are thinking of leaving their current employer or they're looking at new roles and the possible benefits and attractions that come with that. So have there been any changes in the law, or is this just a time of year?
So basically, recently there was no changes in the law about this particular point about the annual bonuses being due or no, and how these annual bonuses can come to play when it comes to calculating the end of service or whatever other labor dues. But the main point why we are bringing this topic now, as you mentioned, this is the end of the year. Majority of the companies like who offer bonuses, they always pay it like upon the completion of a year or something. And here there is a point that it might be a bit too technical, but we should discuss it because it might make a difference for employees and for employers also. A lot of time you see situations where an employee who's working for a company like for 7-8 years, there is always like upon every year a review of the company performance, and let's say a percentage of 2% or 5% or whatever percentage of the annual turnover will be distributed to the employees according to different schemes, depends whatever the position. So let's say we have a situation where the contracts of the employee doesn't provide for this stuff and the law doesn't by default give it. But if we have a practice in a company where these bonuses are paid like first year, second year, 7 years, 8 years, 9 years, like let's say the moment we exceed like maybe 3 or 4 years, if at a certain time the company will come and say this year we're not paying bonuses because we are changing the policy, that's a situation where the employee have the right to challenge it. Because as you mentioned, that people will move from companies to another from time to time. But if we have someone who's earning X amount per month, but he know that in practice, there's a bonus waited at the end of the year. This employee is renewing his contract with the company, regardless they are doing the written renewal or just a matter of practice, with the assumption that I have my X dirham salary per month, but also there is a bonus waited at the end of the year. So the moment the company practice give the impression to the employee that this bonus is coming as a matter of fact, that's not something to be considered yes or no, it's definitely coming, only the amount may vary from time to time, the company has no clear right to come and say, this year we are changing our mind, we're not going to pay bonuses. Mm. At that situation, the employee can raise a complaint to the company, or can he discuss it with the company that, guys, the bonus that I always receive, I want to have it this year. That's for the annual bonus. How this, like a way of the annual bonus that you receive just regardless whether you are leaving the company or staying in the company, that is the matter of end of service. And these bonuses are something to be considered when it comes to your calculations. Because basically your salary, as mentioned, is the X dirham you receive every month, but this bonus you receive at the end, it's something. Keep it on hold. A majority of the people will tell you end of service is based on basic salary, which is true and not true at the same time. Because in practice, it is basic salary. But if you see the wording of the law itself, it's say end of service is calculated based on salary minus allowances. So if we have the package the employee receives as monthly salary, bonuses and allowances. When it comes to end of service, we have to take out the allowances. What about the bonus? The bonus is not an allowance, so you cannot take it out, which means it should be considered when it comes to end of service. And in certain situations, these bonuses may turn your end of service upside down. You've seen situations where end of service were calculated without the bonus as 100,000 dirham, while after adding the bonus, we are talking about 1 million or 700 or 600,000. And we keep facing a lot of challenges from employers with it, especially like from HR departments and accounting departments, because they are not familiar with it. And when we come to them with these arguments, they think we are bringing stuff from the moon, while actually this is the law, and this is the practice at the court here.
So if somebody looks at their end of service and they think it's not quite right, but they're being told by their company, this is policy, we're doing this to the letter of the law, what you're saying is the interpretation of it might not be correct.
Yeah, exactly, because what we see in practice, like a lot of HR departments, I don't want to say HR, like employers, a lot of time, they follow the law in a very like simple way, while actually the law is way more than developed than what people may think about it. And this was already endorsed a couple of times by the Dubai Court of Cassation.
Okay, so let's go back for a moment to the bonus point that you were making there. And it was, if I receive a bonus as part of my, if you include it as part of a salary, but you include it as part of a, it's the nature of your job. It's a matter of course that you will receive a bonus. And one year you don't, or it doesn't contribute towards your end of service benefits. Isn't that easy for a company to state contractually that this is at company discretion or it depends on company performance? And if you keep an employee or employees abreast of how the company is doing, surely a company can turn around and say, well, it has nothing to do with anything. We've kept you abreast of it. We didn't hit target this year. Therefore, there will be no bonus like it or lump it.
So basically, the situation you describe, it's almost like 99% of the cases we've seen.
Yeah.
Every time we see a contract that provides for a bonus, it always says it's up to the discretion of the employer, it's not guaranteed bonus and stuff. But the way how it will work, sometimes you see a company that say annual bonus, but the contract does not include a scheme. Like, for example, is it 5%? Is it, for example, 3% upon achieving X target or whatever?
Yeah.
If you have overperformance or anything. So just say like you are entitled for annual bonus upon the company discretion, and they stop there. Later in practice, you see first year, second year, third year, they paid lump sums, but without a clear scheme, which means it doesn't show that, for example, this is 5% of the net turnover or any of that. So the court, if let's say the employee will challenge this issue and he say, I'm entitled for a bonus and it should be part of my end of service, when they go to court, the court will come and ask the employer, like, do you have a scheme of calculation? If the employer will have a scheme of calculation that shows that first year, the scheme calculation resulted in 200,000, second year, 70, third year, zero. If the calculation of the scheme will support the zero, let's say the company is doing minus, they are not achieving anything, the court is not going to ask you to pay the bonus. But what we frequently see, an employee will receive flat fee, 50,000 every year, without any scheme, without anything. Company will pay it first, second, third, fourth year. Year number five, they will come and say, we don't want to pay it.
Okay.
They don't have any argument at the court in this situation.
Okay, so if there are details there and there is a very clear scheme and it is outlined with percentages and there is a logic to it, I guess, then there's really nowhere to go with this to fight this. But in most cases, in the vast majority of cases, it's just not clear.
To be honest, majority of the cases we've seen, there was no clear scheme. Even the one that have a scheme, it always produced something. And the court will tell you pay a bonus but doesn't force you. Doesn't tell you that if every year you pay 100,000 as per the scheme, year number four, you have to pay 100,000. If the scheme will show 1,000, you pay just the 1,000. Mm-hmm. So the idea, the bonus should be paid regardless what's the amount.
Yeah. I think the answer you always come around to in the end, Ali, when you tell us this, is look at your contract really carefully. And if you're not confident, get somebody else to have a look at it for you.
To be honest, that's what we always advise employees about. But especially for this point with the bonus, we also recommend companies read carefully before you offer the contracts.
Yeah.
Because a lot of time, like, it's easy for companies to say small salary and we just keep a big bonus just upon discretion. If we want, we pay it. If we don't, we don't pay it. Okay, that's something you can do first, second year, but the moment the employee spends 3 or 4 years in the company, you're not going to have this flexibility anymore.
Okay, so that's employment contracts, end of services and bonuses. We've got quite a few questions coming in for Ali. We've got questions of a medical nature. We've got an employment question about a visa and also about a new build property. Ali will be answering those next.
Drive Live, Talks Legal.
We are talking legal. Our guest today is Ali Al-Assad from Umalova and Plethka, and we were just talking about employment contracts, the end of service benefits, the bonuses, all the important questions you need to know about when it comes to your money, what you're entitled to. But we have had a few texts on something slightly different too. Ali, if we can start with this one. This one was emailed in to us. And this is basically about a man who's had, I think it's a man. Yes, it is a man. He's had a problem with a bulging disc in the past. It was corrected by physiotherapy, so far so normal. But mid last year, the pain was more intense, so they went to see a doctor. And that was an orthopaedic surgeon. They recommended surgery. The surgery was carried out. 5 months later, he still struggles with walking, sitting, standing and general movement. He sought the opinion of other doctors who now say there was an anomaly with the surgery and it wasn't disclosed to the patient. So the other doctors have said there was something went wrong. You weren't told at the time. So he now needs to undergo a delicate correctional procedure because his nervous system was affected by the surgery. So he's got MRIs, he's got CT scan reports from before and after the surgery, which I suppose would be supporting evidence. First of all, can he file a complaint with the Department of Health?
So basically, when it comes to the situation you just described, there is two ways of recourse. First one, you can report the practitioner or the doctor who was taking care of you and who allegedly, or like let's say presumably, had the mistake. You have the right to report him or her to the Dubai Health Authority. And from there, they can review the matter and whether they give a fine or suspend the license. But usually, you're not going to receive compensation from doing so. So it's more reporting a bad practice to the licensing authority. In the event you are looking to have compensation or any recovery of damages you suffered because of this bad treatment or, let's say, the mistake that happened during the operation you had, in this situation, what we recommend is to approach the court and file your complaint there. In this situation, the breaking point or like the main point of the matter will be the court decision to appoint a panel of doctors who will review your, will have to examine your situation, the reports, your physical situation, and from there they will draft a report and they will explain to the court whether the first doctor did whether he followed the best practice that any doctor will follow. However, like out of no hand, without his mistake, like some complication took place because, as we know, some operations may have side effects and not like maybe certain time no doctor can guarantee that's not gonna happen. So if the court will see that the first doctor did all his best and all, not just his best, all the best available practice, however, the matter didn't end up in a good situation, most likely he's not going to have any penalty or any compensation to pay to you. While on the other hand, in the event the court will see there was some kind of negligence or a major mistake from the side of the doctor, then yes, you will be entitled for compensation that will cover the damages you already suffered and whatever confirmed damages or pains or losses you have to incur like within a given period of time in the future.
So this person in particular thinks that the initial mistake was made by the surgeon, and the fact that they didn't disclose this information, does that leave the surgeon in a difficult position if there was a problem and they didn't tell the patient afterwards?
So basically, in the event just a matter of non-disclosing, and let's say the side effect was anticipated without mistake, then the chances for compensation will be lower. While in the event that we have a situation where the complication resulted from a mistake, and on top of that, it was not communicated or explained to the patient, then here we have a situation of the chance for compensation are higher, because here we can also order some kind of like a bad faith, because let's say it was communicated at that time, maybe there was a chance to fix it or at least to reduce the losses by not reporting it. Is like, for example, whenever you have hit and run,
yeah,
you hit someone on the road by a car and you run away. So it's, you just double or you increase your liability by doing that.
Okay, that's a question in by email. If you want to email the program, by the way, you can do that. Very simple. drivelive@dubaieye1038.ae is the email address. You can also call us 423 1010. Isa is at the phones today, or the usual and quickest way probably to do this is 4001 or via the free app. You can text that way. We're going to talk about commissions in a second, how they form part of end of service benefits. We'll come back to that. But here's a question in. Let's give him a name. Let's just say it is anonymous. I have purchased a ready property in Dubai June last year, Ali. The transfer was carried out flawlessly. Before transfer, the developer gave the buyer an opportunity to inspect the property and list down things that, you know, make a snagging list, essentially. It was promised that snagging list would be sorted within 1 month. However, it's not been carried out yet. So clearly it's taken some time. The person says, despite various emails, calls, reminders, developers not taking his commitment to this snagging seriously. So as an owner, what are my legal rights and where do I complain about issues such as snagging?
So basically, generally speaking, in the event there is any issue with a developer, like the first recourse you can do is reporting this developer to land department. However, then doesn't mean that he will be forced to make the snagging or whatever rectification the property will need, because the land department can issue fines but cannot issue an enforceable order to the developer. So in the event after that the developer still doesn't cooperate with you, what you can do, what we can recommend in this situation, send a legal notice to the developer saying that within, let's say, depending on whatever rectification we're talking about, within 15 days, 1 week, mm. 1 month, you have to fix that. Otherwise, alter the relevant legal channels. In the event nothing will be done by the developer, what practically we can recommend, do whatever rectification is needed. For example, like bring your own contractor. Let's say there's anything about painting or about, let's say, irrigation or pipelines, whatever. Let them do the work. You will pay it from your side and keep all the proof you have, like all the invoices, all the receipts, the stuff you incurred. Once the job is done, you can file a case at the court against the developer claiming the compensation for all the stuff you paid. And from there, you follow the normal process. You have a case, you have a final judgment, you enforce it against the developer.
Okay, so there is a place to go. If anyone else is in a similar situation, there is something that can be done.
Yeah, exactly. There is all, but just the matter here is that there is nothing that will that there is no instant recourse to force developer to do it within like 1 day or 2 days or even 1 month. A complaint to land department may help you to put pressure on the developer, but if you want to have something enforceable in your hand, you will need the court order.
I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? You just bought a property. You just want to move in. You don't want the hassle. You don't. I mean, for, I guess for a lot of people, it's just, oh, this is just too much of a pain to scratch the dripping paint off the light switches. Those, you know, if they're small snagging items, if they're more than that, then maybe you're going to take it further. It's just having that kind of extra pressure to bear, I suppose.
Yeah, it's because you have the tension you will have, you have the hassle of, and also it costs you money. However, in the event we are talking about major defects, let's say there is something related to the structure of the building or something that may prohibit you from using the property, that's the time when we can consider even termination of the contract, which means you give back the property and you take back your money. But for that, we need something major.
Yeah. Right. This is not a case of a kitchen not being installed to a good enough standard. This has to be something quite serious.
Exactly.
Okay, there is just a follow-up question about the medical situation. So if we can just answer this one quickly, Ali. It says, regarding the health issue, can we place that case under medical negligence and sue the doctor via the hospital?
Basically, here we have 2 points. Because if we're talking about, let's say we assume that there is negligence or a mistake, here we have two approaches. We have the criminal approach and we have the civil one. Because in the event we have a doctor who will be practicing or, let's say, in the process of doing an operation and there is major negligence, this major negligence may qualify as some kind of attempt to harm someone or to cause a physical harm or even may lead to the death of the person. So at that time, there is a criminal case or criminal report that can be filed against the doctor himself for endangering someone else's life. And that's against the doctor himself, and also you can put the company there, but the company is not going to be in jail. Basically, it will be a fine to the company, that's which is the hospital in this case. That's number one. Number two, especially based on the criminal judgment you can obtain against the hospital and the doctor, you have the right to file a civil case against them at the court. And this situation, you sue the doctor in his personal capacity, and you have the right to sue also the hospital by being like the employer or the supervisor of the doctor. In this situation, let's say if the court will end up giving you a compensation of, let's say, 300,000 dirham, you can enforce it against any of them, the doctor or the hospital, whoever will be able to pay first. And later it will be another matter between the hospital and the doctor, how they will sort it between each other, but it's not going to be your concern.
Okay, we've got quite a few questions coming in for Ali, particularly on employment, Ali, so we'll get to those next. We do have questions on allowances, salary bonuses, benefits, and how that can be apportioned, so we'll get to those next.
This is Drive Live. Get in touch with the show.
Text us on 4001.
You're listening to Drive Live with Tim and NLT. It's 10 to 5 and we are talking legal. Our guest today, Ali Al-Assad from Yamalov and Plethka. And we've got quite a few questions, Ali, so I'm going to try and get through as many of them
possible.
So I'll just come to this one. What is there any guidelines on what percentage of your wage can be made up with allowances?
Basically, the employment law in the UAE does not show, for example, as it should be 50-50 or like 70-30 or something. So the law doesn't give any mandatory guidelines for that. However, what we see in practice is that the basic salary always range between 55-60%. We've seen situations where companies offer like for the allowance to be 80% of the package. To be honest, we don't have anything in the law to say this is illegal, but this will give you a sign that this company is trying to take away of you your end of service.
Yeah.
So we do not recommend to join such company.
Okay, there's another limit or another guideline. I'm an expert working 17 years at a ministry. Is there a limit on how many months' salary I can receive as gratuity?
So basically, the end of service cannot exceed the salary of 2 years. So okay. In general, like, you need to work for around like 24 years or 25 years for a company to reach this limit.
Yeah. Okay. So most people
27, actually, something like 27 years.
Fall within the limits. This is a question that's come in too. It says, my brother was told that he will be terminated. However, the organization will renew his visa for 1 month and then terminate it. This person's asking, what's the logic of renewing and then terminating? Should he resign and will he still be paid either way?
So basically, in general, our recommendation, if you feel that the company is about to fire you, and we're not talking about Article 120, just a normal termination, our recommendation, never resign, because by resigning, you may affect severely your package of termination, because there will be a way of arbitrary dismissal, and maybe depending on how many years you work for the company, your end of service might be reduced. So our recommendation, do not resign, let them fire you, is better for you. About whether they will renew the visa or no, also this is, as long as you are working for them, for this period, they have the obligation to renew your visa. They cannot keep you without a visa.
It's interesting that, you know, because it's kind of counterintuitive, isn't it? You're saying, don't resign, be fired. But to most people, we think, well, if I resign, then I've left on my own terms. And if I get fired, it might look bad on my next job that I might take up in the future. But, you know, that doesn't work financially.
Like from a legal standpoint, and financially, it doesn't work better to be fired than being than resigning. However, in the event you can reach a mutual agreement with the company where we call it like amicable termination, right. Where, for example, like there will be no firing letter on your record or on your CV, and you can just amicably terminate. This is, yeah, like it will be a balance between the financial part and the emotional one. However, like we've seen majority of the cases we've seen, like parties were not really worried about being fired, especially because, you know, a lot of people will be fired. They will go back to their home country, so the entire link will be cut between the firing and stuff. So
okay,
people were more focused on the financial part of it.
There's an interesting question on VAT. We've been talking a lot about VAT with you, Ali, and just generally because it's new to all of us, isn't it, at the moment? So hopefully you can answer this question. This one is, I hear that those employed in the financial services industry who earn commissions will have to pay VAT on their commissions. Is that something you've heard of? Because essentially that's a tax on their income.
So basically, in the event we have an employee who's part of his salary is a commission, this is his salary. And usually the company paying the salary to the employee cannot be taxed, because this is, as you mentioned, it's not an income tax, it's an added value tax. And even it's not a tax that the company has to pay by itself, because usually the company will just collect it from the client and pay it to the government, because it's whenever supplying services. Paying the salary, I don't see it as a service or a good deal.
Yeah. Hopefully that answers the question. We have another question here, Ali, from Anna. This is going back to the fact that when we talked about properties being purchased, if there's something wrong, you know, that then there's some recourse, isn't there? So they've recently purchased a property and they can't use it because of the AC noise on top of the unit. Does this, so basically the AC is running, it's too noisy, it's unbearable. Does this count as a major problem because they are regretting the purchase with this and they're wondering if they can get their money back?
We've seen a situation that was similar. It's someone who purchased a unit in the winter and like everything went normal. But when the summer came in and like all the AC units in the building were functioning, they discovered that there is a major fan installed just on the back side of one of their bedrooms, and there was no way to stay inside. In the event we are talking about some kind of disturbance that made the unit unusable, thus we have the right to consider to terminate the agreement.
Okay, so, I mean, how grey an area is it in terms of what counts as a major problem?
Here, most likely, in the event we go to court, there will be an engineer who will be involved in the matter. And especially they will start looking first if there is a way to fix it, let's say, to reduce the noise, to put some kind of light, divider, like isolation of noise or something like that. In the event it's not possible, and the expert report from the engineer come in favor of the buyer saying that the unit cannot be used, we have the right to terminate, yes.
That is one noisy AC, by the sound of things.
If it's enough to have buyer's remorse, the AC must be really noisy.
It would have to be, wouldn't it? Can we finish off today? Just looking very quickly, we didn't get to commissions and how commissions relate to end of service benefits. We talked about bonuses a little bit earlier on, but if you are working on a commission basis, you are due gratuity when you finish a contract, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly, because usually even the law provides for it under Article 57, if I'm not wrong, that for people who get paid by commission, for end of service, you calculate the average of the last 6 months of commissions, and this is the salary you'll use to calculate the end of service.
Okay, and that, what do you need to prove that in a court of law?
In the event you go to court, let's say you claim that you want your end of service, just state your bank statement and see how much you received bonus commissions in the last 6 months, made the average, take it all, divided by six, you will end up with a number. That's the number you will claim as your salary, and just bring the bank statements to the court and your employment contract, and you will be fine.
So you're making this sound quite straightforward for us all, Ali. Is this something that we could do ourselves?
Basically, it's not impossible. If you speak Arabic, you have easier chance because you can draft for yourself. If not, you can draft it in English, take it to a legal translator, and from there you proceed. And to be honest, like, the court is the court who decided these principles, so they will know it. However, you will be faced with, like, the other party, which is the company, is not going to be that silent about it. So we need someone to help you. But is it impossible to do it without a lawyer? No. Is it recommended? Yes.
See, Ali, I like that. Not talking yourself out of a job, but not making it sound too difficult either.
Yeah,
smart. It's nicely done.
Good salesmanship.
Nicely
yeah.
done. Our guest for Drive Live Talks Legal was, of course, Ali Al-Assad from Umalava and Plethka. Ali, great to see you as always.
Our pleasure. Thank you for having me.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.